The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
This is brand new BPIB from Cardinals spring training in Jupiter, Florida. I talk to former Cardinal pitcher, current Cardinal broadcaster, and perpetual good guy, Ricky Horton, about what he's looking forward to as he gets ready to call the exhibition games and Grapefruit League play, which begins this weekend. We also talk about the lens through which to judge and look and evaluate the players in spring, but also how to look at a youth movement for a Cardinals team that really has always been about winning and now says it's about developing. Cue the music.
The best fans in baseball deserve the best podcast in baseball. It's BPIB. Here's your host, Derek Gould.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closets by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined here in Jupiter, Florida, by former Cardinals pitcher, current Cardinals broadcaster, and winner of the 2025 St. Louis Baseball Writers Chapter Good Guy Award, which is how I lured him onto this podcast. It's Ricky Horton.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to be nice to you this morning to live up to that award, but that was very kind. I love the Baseball Writers Dinner. I've been going for so many years. It's just kind of a celebration of baseball, and it was really cool to be a part of that. Of course, Derek, as you know, we're also celebrating the 40-year anniversary of the 85 Cardinal team. That was part of that event too, so I that was meaningful too to be there with some of my guys.
I had a chance to talk with Ozzie Smith, not to name drop, but during the practice the other day, and I was telling him that one of the things I really like is when players come back who have shared events like that, and they couldn't have seen each other for 5 years, 7 years, 11 years, but the immediate synergy of inside jokes. Yeah. It just happens like that.
Yeah, you had this experience together, and I don't know this, but I can imagine it's like people who have been in the service together. There's kind of an instant recall of their dynamics that they had, because you have a brotherhood when you're in that kind of environment and serving somewhere, and we as teammates in baseball, we spend a lot of time together. I mean, you're together, as you know, many hours of every day, more than you are with your family. So the inside jokes pop out, the fun of what you did together, the accomplishments, and it ends up being more about the fun and the inside jokes than it does the actual game. It's interesting, and we have to conjure up, and of course I have to do it as a broadcaster. I'm saying interviewing somebody from 85 season, I got to remember, now wait a minute, who did we get off to a good start or didn't we? I don't remember. I mean, I know where we played in October, but some of the games are a bit more fuzzy and foggy to you, whether it's 85 or 87 or 84, whatever it was. But the stories and the moments that you have together, they last.
Does that only happen for a championship team, or do you have other teams that you've been a part of that because of either a great joke or a great stretch, or even like, and sometimes it's tragedy, but that bind you in a different way?
Yeah, the White Sox team I was on wasn't very good in 1988. Yet, my teammates were Jerry Royce, who I still have an ongoing friendship with. I didn't really know Jerry until we were teammates, and we hung out a lot that year. And Dave LaPointe was on that team. It's the third time that I was a teammate of his. And you say tragedy. It wasn't tragedy, but it was a kind of a horrific event. And Greg Walker had an event on the field where he had a seizure, and Herm Schneider was the trainer. And that was a kind of a, I would say, galvanizing moment with us. And there's several other specific things I remember from that season. I remember me and Ozzie Guillen having a shouting match with each other because he had his friend in our clubhouse. after we got buried in Detroit, he had one of his buddies in the clubhouse, and I said he didn't belong there. I loved Ozzie, but it was just kind of a thing that we did. I mean, when you compete and you care about what you do, you have emotions that come to the top too. And I don't think you necessarily have to win a championship to have memories. I think it's just being able to compete together for a common cause, which is why we love this thing.
the common cause for this year's Cardinals might be a little different than we're used to. Going into, as Bill DeWitt Jr., the chairman of the team, owner of the team, stood before them and talked about how this was his 30th year as owner. In a lot of ways, it's different than the previous 29. Certainly, the tone is different, where they're not talking about maintaining kind of the chase for the NL pennant brand. They're looking more within, looking to invest in development. We are speeding towards games in this spring unlike any other, and you're about to call them for KMOX 11:20 a.m. What do you look for in games? What are you eager to see in games with the umbrella of this reset, transition, word of the day theme that they've set up?
Yeah, I'm still going with reset. I know what not to say, but I think reset's the right word.
You're not allowed to say rebuild, right?
No, can't say. I don't even know what that word means. The whole idea, I do think the messaging has been really clear that that's the direction they're going in, and maybe that's a depressure thing for players too. I mean,
great point. Yes.
I feel like I'm not going to say that's part of the method to the madness, but it might be. I mean, if you're looking to get, I mean, I don't want to over, you know, psychologize this here, but if you're trying to communicate something to Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman, maybe it's, hey, you're going to play, you know, just enjoy it. You know, you can play. Go do it. As opposed to you have to and you got to. I mean that's a tough thing to have to live up to expectations. And maybe they're the kind of players that'll respond to that and all of a sudden be who you want them to be, and they'll be who they want to be. So I'm not so sure there's not some actual direct meaning in this kind of way we're describing the season. But as far as doing the games, I'm going to still really look for the same things. You look for development. I mean, you always look for development. I mean, is Steven Matz better than he was last year? He's not a young guy. Is Eric Fetty better? Is he like he was with the White Sox? Or, you know, he was kind of okay with the Cardinals last year, but you feel like there's another level for him in a Cardinal uniform. So you're always looking for that next thing. When I look back at 1985, as an example, we were predicted to come in last place. I've said this many times over the winter. We were supposed to come in last place, and we end up in the World Series. I'm not predicting that's going to happen, but it was a bunch of young guys that all developed at the same time. Mm-hmm. Willie McGee became an MVP. He was not an MVP before that year. Ozzie got bigger and stronger and became a better hitter. Terry Pendleton came out of nowhere. Vince Coleman came out of not nowhere, but you weren't sure whether it would work at the big league level. So, you know, you got all these young players, Ken Daly, Todd Worrell, everybody just kind of got better. And so I think if everybody gets better, then I think it'll still be a fun product to talk about. Now, if players who are given a position to develop don't develop, then it's going to be tougher to talk about what's going on, because you obviously, for the audience, Derek, and who you write to and who I speak to, you know, you have to be honest about it. I mean, it is what it is, and you're not trying to be negative, or you're just trying to be accurate about it. But, you know, I prefer to be positive. That's kind of my nature. I kind of have always been that way. So I prefer to look for some positives, and there will be plenty of them.
You hit on it there. That's something actually in at the GM meetings. I spoke with John Mozeliak, the president of baseball operations, and one of the things he brought up was letting the air out of the room. That's not the phrase that he said, but he goes, look, you know, all these young players have arrived, and they've been immediately in the Jiffy Pop tin of expectations of winning a World Series. And what he didn't say is what they arrived into was a clubhouse that one year was losing and had all the stress of losing, and then last year they were winning enough, but they weren't the team they thought they'd be, and they had offensive struggles, and so it creates this like stress, this tenseness that every so often a guy like Kyle Gibson could interrupt, every so often, you know, a guy like Lars Nootbaar could interrupt, but he wasn't around or healthy that much, which only added to this notion that there was a whole lot of pressure. And, you know, Mo said, I want to release that valve a little bit.
So I've got to say, first off, I love Jiffy Pop. And I love that analogy. That was just a good childhood memory of Jiffy Pop getting ready to go. However, I would not have liked to play in a Jiffy Pop situation. And Whitey Herzog was not that guy. Mm. And of course, we miss Whitey in spring training without Lou Brock, without Bob Gibson, without Red Shanings, without Whitey. I mean, it's hard. I mean, it really is. And there's a piece of us that's missing, I think, that we still need to honor. But you know, baseball moves on, and you want to find the next generation. But Whitey's Whitey never talked baseball with me ever. He only talked about fishing. How's Ann? How are the kids? Hey, what are you doing? I mean, Whitey was more about you than he was about. I mean, he wouldn't overstress you. He felt that a good player was a relaxed player. Mm-hmm. He encouraged us to go fishing on game days. Think about that. He wanted us to go get up at 6 in the morning, go fishing, come back, take a nap, and go to work. And so, I mean, that just seems antithetical to winning baseball. But yet that's what he did. Yeah. So think about the contrast from Whitey wanting a relaxed player but a prepared player. And then you've got Tony La Russa, who wants a guy dealing with pressure and wants to ramp up the pressure because that's how diamonds are made, mm-hmm. which he loved to say. So I'm not sure since Tony where we've been on that. We've been more like Tony, I think, than like Whitey. And maybe this is a reverse back to kind of a more, you know, this is baseball. This is fun. It's not, it's your job and you're paid to do well. But maybe doing well, there's a relaxed nature to that that maybe goes along with that.
How did the outside expectations factor into that? You mentioned that 85 was expected to finish last, but you do get to the World Series. You do play well. And then, of course, expectations probably are heightened. I think the modern-day Cardinals have, until this year, really lived with this notion that if it's not and Oliver Marmol and Mike Schilt and Mike Matheny, they all welcome this. I know there's a sense that this is what you're supposed to say in spring training, but they all set a line that it's World Series or bust. Mike Schilt put that sign up once where it had the 11 World Series title, but it was in a 3x4, mm-hmm. and there was a blank spot that everybody saw. Yeah. You know, I mean, so it hasn't been subtle for 20 years. So how do the expectations factor into that kind of tone that Whitey was able to set?
Well, I think he still expected us to play winning baseball. He set a vision. He said we're going to run more. We've got young players. We're going to run. We're going to replace Bruce Sutter by doing a bullpen by committee, which was the first time that phrase was ever used, really, in 1985. And so that worked. So he had a vision. It wasn't as if he was saying, don't care what happens. But so he had a vision that once you start to see it, and that's why playing the games matter. Once you get into the games, you develop a sense of, hey, this is going to work or this isn't going to work. And it's the great thing about baseball. There are a lot of familiar things every year, and then there's a lot of new things. There's familiar sights and sounds and some players that you know, but there's also new guys. I mean, is Quinn Matthews going to be a big leaguer this year? Is Tink Hentz going to be in a bullpen and be a lights-out kind of guy, which he might be? I mean, all that's a maybe. I mean, I don't know, but it's going to be fun to find out. And so back to 85, that just developed over time. We didn't have a great start and then caught fire in June. And then you look around and you say, hey, we're pretty good. Mm-hmm. And maybe this is working. And our style of play is developing. So I think you always shoot for that. You're talking to competitors, so you always still care about winning. But it's not kind of this intense pressure thing. One year, again, when I was with the White Sox, our GM came in and said in spring training in our team meeting, and I just gotten traded over there, he said, if everything works out well, we've been getting better the last 3 years. If everything works out well, no one gets hurt, we got a chance to play 500. That's what he said.
Okay.
And I can't tell you how deflating that was.
I can imagine.
I mean, it was terrible. And I know he's being logical in what he's saying and maybe trying to diffuse any pressure we had, but I think that was too far the other way. And that's why you still have to say you're competing, you still have to work to compete and see where you end up.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
You mentioned Quinn Matthews and Tink Hentz. Yeah. As these games roll out in the Grapefruit League, who are you eager to see, and what are you eager to see from them?
I want to see Jimmy Crooks catch. So I feel like there's a lot of good things I'm hearing about him. I want to see the development of several guys, and I mentioned a couple of them earlier, but I want to see, is Gorman made some adjustments? Has Jordan Walker made some adjustments? Has Lars Nootbaar made some adjustments, and is he healthy? I mean, there's some of those guys. I mean, I don't really need to see Brendan Donovan, because I know he's as steady a guy, and you don't want to take him for granted, and I'm not saying it for that reason, but you know the dude can hit, and then Alec Burleson can hit. I'm not worried about, I know who those guys are, but there's a lot of guys I'm not sure who they are. And so, and those names I mentioned are part of that. Again, the pitching is going to be just overall a very interesting thing as it develops too. You know, you never have enough arms, as they always say, yeah, going into spring training, especially with the rash of injuries that baseball has been dealing with. But, you know, is Matthew Liberatore going to jump up to that next level? And, you know, what about Michael McGreevy? Was that just a kind of a nice moment for him last year, or is he the real deal that can be a starter in the big leagues? We'll find out.
Do you have a feel when you like drill down and kind of prepare? We saw McGreevy in San Francisco. That was a remarkable start, and he had a good live BP the other day. But live BP is what live BP is, and lively sinker. Do you have a feel for why some of these guys might be able to take the leap? Like, for example, if Gorman does make that adjustment, what's possible? If Lars stays healthy, what's possible? If Quinn Matthews, who I think you've seen a few times here, if Quinn Matthews is the sizzling lefty that he's supposed to be, what's possible? Do you start thinking in those terms?
So I think that the word I've been hitting on the last few years is, and I think it's something that the Cardinals have needed to improve on, is finishing the development. Not developing guys, not getting the wrong guys. And, you know, I feel like we've done a really good job of, and it's not on anybody's fault list, but that's why they're doubling down by hiring more coordinators and things in the minor leagues to help guys get finished. So the way I always think about it is, I mean, I got finished playing in winter ball in Dominican. And many players I know got finished there, or they were finished, one of the two, because you're playing against big leaguers. And it was a great test of, you know, can you survive? Can you figure out? And I learned a change up there, and that was part of my finishing. Some guys would do it in instructional league. Now it's Arizona, which is really just for some prospects. I'm not so sure the old way wasn't better, of having more guys go to winter ball and having more guys play in instructional league, because, you know, the high school guys needed instructional league, the college guys needed winter ball to get that last step of development. And so finishing a guy, in my mind, has gotten harder. And that is not something that you do with a radar gun or with a bat speed indicator or a hitting lab rip. In my mind, that's not how that happens. It's learning the craft, which is a little bit more of the art than it is the science of baseball.
I was trying to ask Miles Michaelis. I was trying to talk to Miles Michaelis. I guess trying is the wrong word. I was talking to Miles Michaelis about this notion, because he threw a knuckleball to Nolan Gorman in his last at-bat. He was talking about maybe throwing a few of those in there. But he's been working on this slider, and it's exactly what – I mean, he's a veteran. He's been around. But he's still in the development game, because he's trying to get this sweeper slider thing. And I asked him, like, at what point do you feel comfortable enough with a pitch to go from the lab with its metrics and its traits into a game? Yeah. And his point was, in spring, you have to. Like, that's you do it because he needs that feedback. But you're right. Like, it has to happen in the crucible of the ballpark, not in the laboratory beside the ballpark.
Yeah, and I'm not against the laboratory beside the ballpark. I think you have to have that. But you know, I think what happens is in the old phrase that pitching coaches used to say when you're developing, and I'm sure they still say that, hitters will tell you. I mean, honestly, that's what happens. You want to know whether your knuckleball works. Yeah. Throw one, and if they hit it 400 feet, it probably didn't work. And you can tell if it had some late action, and you ask the catcher, and you say, "Oh, that really looked good. It looked like a thing, and looked like a slider. Then it broke that way." I mean, you can get stuff from your teammates too. Mm-hmm. That's part again of the art of baseball, the nuances, the and the things that you have to do by reaction. And you have to do with the ability to adjust from pitch to pitch and play to play. You have to see that that guy was on that pitch. And so, well, maybe that isn't a good pitch. And I don't care whether it what's the whether it was a good pitch last week or last month or last year or what that guy's done. You can tell right then whether or not you need to make an adjustment. And that's, to me, that's the fun part of the mm-hmm. game. And that's where that experimenting comes in is again, ultimately hitters will tell you if you're throwing the right pitch or not.
I think I like the way you describe that, the finishing of a pry. I've adopted the word amplifying. That's one of the things the Cardinals have failed to do is amplify their prospects. They've seen Randy Arozarena go and amplify elsewhere, Adolis Garcia. Was like they got to the majors and never got the playing time to do that or didn't get the support to do that. And so then they go off and all of a sudden another team says, oh, this talent – let's amplify it. Yeah. And I'm eager to see if the Cardinals' new system does that.
Yeah, I think that's you say amplify, I say finish. I think we're saying the same thing. It's what gets the guy to the height of how good a player he really is or can be. Yeah. And you know, George Kisel used to say to all of the people that he would teach how to teach. I mean, George was a great baseball guy, but he was a great teacher of teachers. That was one thing that was so special about him. But learn this from Jose Oquendo. He would say, and Steve Turco was another former teammate, good friend of mine. And George would say to all the young coaches, you need, you know, every player has a key, and you have to help them find it.
Oh, that's good.
And so it doesn't mean, you know, you're yelling at them or talking to them every single pitch, but you have to know them well enough to know kind of what's not working and what that key is and help them find that key. And that, again, that's what coaching is all about. And again, just grateful that, you know, in my life, I had several people that gave me keys along the way, not just one. Mm-hmm. You know, Dave LaPointe's again saying his name, but one of his favorite saying is, I never had a coach I didn't learn something from. I never learned everything from one of them.
Right.
So if you have that attitude as a player that, you know, you have to be coachable. We all have to be coachable, but you also have to hear it from different voices and know what to take and what not to take. Mm-hmm. And so I have very little patience for the blaming a player's lack of performance on a coach at the big league level. I have no patience for that. None, because it isn't the coach's fault. The player has to use whatever he's got in that particular day, and if he's going to get the credit, Dave. One last quick thought on that. Mm-hmm. Dave Ricketts yelled at me my first year in the big leagues. I got yelled at by a lot of coaches, but Dave said, "You said something in the paper about me yesterday," and I said, "Rick Hummel had written it, and our great friend." He said, "What?" He said, "I said you said that I helped you get ready for games." He said, "Don't you be giving me credit." And he's literally yelling at me. This is not like a sarcasm. This is real angry with me. He says, "I'm telling you, if you pitched well yesterday, you pitched well. Don't be giving me credit because I'm not taking the blame when you're terrible."
Oh, that's
And he said, "You've got to internalize that, and you can't be putting it off on other people." And I understand you're trying to just be nice about, but don't do that. I mean, in your mind, you got to realize that you are in charge of your performance, period. Mm-hmm. And you can learn from people and all that. So I just felt like that was a great lesson. I learned that my rookie year playing and never forgot it.
I like that. That's the ownership thing.
Exactly. 100%. And that's what, and some of our young guys need to take ownership of that. And I think that's part of the finishing that we're talking about, or the amplifying is like, okay, I'm confident that I belong here now.
Right.
And
I
know that I'm ready. And that's what winter ball did for me, is I'm pitching to big league Latin, you know, Dominican players, and I'm getting some of them out. It's like, well, they can swing and miss too.
That's right.
And so that kind of turned on a light for me.
Yeah, to borrow from Derek Lilliquist, the former pitching coach around here, you know, the players recognize that they're all sports cars, not RC cars.
They don't
have a coach who's at the controls. They're driving.
They are. You are. That's 100% right. And I love Derek too. But that's right. And I just think that's a misconception. When we think, because, you know, when we baseball fans come in all shapes and sizes and we impute our experience of, you know, coaching our kids in Little League or watching our kids play high school baseball, and there's a different relationship between player and coach at that point. Mm-hmm. When you get to the big leagues, you know, every big leaguer can be a high school coach, and maybe even a big league man. If you get to that point, You know a lot about the game. You've swung the bat 8 zillion times. I never like the conversation about, you know, the catcher. It's the catcher's fault. You know, like Yachty was so good, and you know, pitcher even giving too much credit to what Yachty signaled when Yachty was here. Of course, mm-hmm. very popular and great catcher, but it'd be like, well, don't shake off Yachty. It's like, yes, shake off Yachty.
Yeah.
I mean, Yachty's great, but he's not you.
Right.
I mean, you know best what you should throw, and he's second. And your partnership with him is important, and he can be a great asset to you, and he was. There's no doubt about that. I mean, in an incredible way with his wisdom. But don't put the burden on him. I mean, if you're saying I'm throwing a pitch because Yachty wants me to, then you're doing the wrong thing.
Right.
All this, and one thing we haven't mentioned yet, and I'm eager to see what you're looking for from him, is the third baseman.
Yeah.
A whole winter of attempting to trade him comes all the way to Jupiter, and here he is. There were openings for them to trade. Obviously, they had a deal for done with Houston that he then vetoed, that Nolan Arenado then vetoed, and he's here. They will continue to look at trades, but it sure seems like, you know, there needs to be, from an organizational standpoint, the same realization and the same welcoming that Nolan Arenado has made, which is, I'm a Cardinal, I'm eager to do work here. What are you looking from him? And you know, you've gotten to know him well through all this. I mean, where do you think he is at, having watched, you know, Paul Goldschmidt go elsewhere and all these moves made, and yet he's still here?
Well, I think he's a pro. He's been around long enough that if this was happening to a third or fourth year player, you'd be worrying about that. Even if he's a great player, you'd be thinking, oh no, is this going to create some, you know, problem in him being ready and doing what it takes? Because he's kind of on autopilot when it comes to doing that. He's been around long enough to know what it takes to get ready for a season, and he's going to do that wherever he is.
Right.
And I feel like the team is going to respect that with him, and I think Ollie and Mo have said nothing but good things about, you know, as the way Ollie put it is, he's here and he's going to do a great job, and he's going to be here until he isn't. And if he isn't, he isn't. And then we adjust and we do that. But you can't play the game in hypotheticals. So you can't be thinking every time he popped out, it's like, oh, well, you probably should have traded him for that. You know, you can't. You just have to just go with him while he's there. It's kind of like when a player gets injured. You know, players get injured, and then you move on.
Mm-hmm.
You go to the next idea and the next thing and fill it up. And so I don't think you start with any preconceived notions about where Nolan's going to end up. And I really don't think it's going to be a problem. I think some guys would be combustible in that. And I played with some guys who were combustible, but he's not combustible. And I don't think the Cardinals clubhouse is, and Ollie's not. And I really don't think it's going to be a drama. Mm-hmm. I think there's some lack of uncertainty, or there's some uncertainty about it, but isn't that what every season's all about anyway?
Yeah, the sense I got was that they, both sides, wanted a trade, but neither side needed a trade. That's kind of a way to look at it.
I think that's a good way to say that, and that's a very big difference. I mean, it's not like I can't play here, get me out of here, it's more just we're moving in a direction. And moving him would have been in line with that direction, is to getting more young players and kind of restocking or whatever we're doing.
Not rebuilding.
So and I think restocking is not a bad word for it.
Rejuvenating is not a bad word.
No, that's right.
And rethinking, reimagining. They need to do all that with the farm system.
I need to do all that stuff every day. So, but I think for his sake, I just don't think it's a big, you know, it's not a big drama. And I think if it became a drama, then you got another problem. But I don't see that happening. I'm not saying it couldn't, but I don't see it happening.
What happens? You mentioned that you like to look at the positive side, so I'm going to ask you a positive question here. Earmuffs, if you're a Cardinal fan that doesn't want to hear a positive question.
Okay.
What if he's great?
Yeah.
What happens if Nolan Arenado comes out of last year, comes into this year, despite all the trade speculation, but puts in all this work all winter, moves around well, and is Nolan Arenado as advertised. What if he's great?
So a couple things could happen if he's great. And it's one thing Ollie loves to talk about is, you know, you want every player, you know, it's, he says it's their career. You want them all to have the best career they can. So regardless of whether, you know, how you feel about what, you want every player to succeed. And if he succeeds at the level that he has in the past, I mean, good for him. And I think, you know, you could make a case for if he does what you just said, that would make him even more tradable, and you'd have more people, you know, that would be, you know, I'm not saying, you know, you'd want to do that, it would be easy to do, but that might make it more of a possibility if he has that kind of year than the other way around, because you're talking about, well, I'm going to get value out of this guy the rest of what he's got going on, and I'll give up my number one guy, and I'll give up this hard throwing reliever. And so, I mean, it could end up, I mean, that's what you want. You don't want your pieces to have less value. You want them to have more. So if Nolan Arenado plays well, that is good for everybody.
Does he play so well that they have to keep him? Like, this is what this has got, and I'm going to ask you this because you'll appreciate this. When Alex Bregman signed with Boston for the high dollar short term thing, and it was like, all right, well, that door is closed, and really there's not another one that appears open for Nolan Arenado. I was like, I wonder if Alex Bregman and the Cubs and all this Detroit and all this stuff, like all these things that have no relation to St. Louis, however, just put a red jacket on Nolan Arenado's back. Like, is that what just happened? Is that where we're at? Is that where this could go?
I think it's possible. I think, you know, that's the two things that could happen. He has a great year. You just celebrate Nolan and just move forward and make him a part of that, rejuvenation of the team. But again, it's not, you know, it's not impossible that I would say maybe what happens is if he has that kind of year you're talking about, and the Cardinals are 10 games under 500, as very different than if he has that kind of year and the Cardinals are 10 games over 500. I think that would say whether or not you go one way or the other. And
that is,
so, I mean, and again, I think at some point, you're at this point, I think you're committed first and foremost. I mean, you always care about Cardinal legacy and Cardinal history and all that stuff, but you're committed right now to getting things going back in the positive direction again with young players, and I think you just have to stay that course.
All right. Well, here's where you can take the earmuffs off, because we'll go back to the reset question. Ricky, does what this team has set for its expectations, does that change how you broadcast games? I've been thinking a lot about this, whether or not, you know, there's a pivot point, right? So 2003, they become a losing team. And I consciously thought and talked to my colleagues like, all right, look, losing is not accepted here, but we can't just bang the drum with every story that they're losing. People know it.
Right.
So we have to pivot to almost like a spring training tone.
Yeah.
What do they get out of this loss? How does this set them up to never let this happen again? This year's a little different because they're set up for the future. Does that change the tone you take as a broadcaster?
I'll tell you what I did last year, and actually the year before too, because I guess now I've had a couple years of experience in that.
Right. I've had practice.
I've had a couple years of practice. So what I kind of hit on for me, and maybe some folks should put the earmuffs back on again, is recognizing that, you know, every player works to win. Every fan wants your team to win. But there is a degree to which coming to the ballpark and being at the ballpark and watching a baseball game or listening to a game or reading about a game or watching a game, all those things that we can talk about, the moves and the way it kind of connects people in St. Louis and beyond, but the way baseball does connect people, you know, winning isn't, it's a weird thing to say, but winning is not the only thing that makes baseball special. So I tended the last couple of years to talk about the experience of being at the ballpark. You know, when I was a kid, my parents taking me to a game, I remember watching Willie Mays play, sitting in the stands watching Willie Mays play, and my parents pointing him out, how great a player he was. I saw Roberto Clemente play as a kid. So I'm watched Nolan Ryan as a 19-year-old rookie in the big leagues pitching for the Mets, you know, in the upper tank of Shea Stadium. And I can tell you those experiences were very meaningful. I remember the hot dogs. I remember walking into the ballpark. I remember the ride down. I remember, and I was young, remember all those things. I don't know if they won or not.
Yeah, interesting. All right.
I don't. So the point is, if you want to make memories at the ballpark, if you want to have fun at the ballpark, you can do that whether the team wins or not. Now, would you rather they win? Of course. And that's not an easy sell, what I'm saying, but I think it's true. And for a fan that would say, and fans can say whatever they want to say because they're the customers. And if they say I'm not going to come to a game because, until the team starts winning, one of my thoughts might be, well, wouldn't you still want to have that experience with your daughter and with your son and teach them how to keep score and bring them to the park and see Fred Bird if they're a young kid? I mean, there's things that happen at the park that still make it fun. Mm-hmm. And to just totally pull away from that, you know, everybody has a right to do that. Yeah. But I'm not sure, you know, being mad about that is going to get you where you want to be.
One of the things I am thinking about this year, and it relates to the 85 team somewhat, is this notion of if you don't have stars and you're trying to create stars, do you need a style of play that is entertaining? Because this is the entertainment business, and people will go see the latest blockbuster movie because of the star in it. Yeah. They don't need to know if it's any good. But if you don't have that star, you better damn well have a style to your movie to bring them to the theater.
I think if you're going to go watch an indie movie, it better be good. So the 85 team, again, back to that
star
was really well, but those stars came out of the style.
Fair.
So was John Tudor a star yet? Did you know who John? John
Tudor, Ozzie Smith, he was a star at that, but not.
And Willie was a 270 hitter. I mean, he's a good player, and they had a good World Series, but he wasn't a 350 hitter. And Jack Clark wasn't the power hitter that he became. He was a good player.
Great point.
And Terry Pendleton, we didn't know. Tom Herr driving at 110 runs. I mean, some of these guys, Andy Van Slyke was young. These guys grew into that stardom because the team had a style that was working and they were winning. I feel like that, you know, Ken Daly's another example. Ken Daly is one of the best relievers the Cardinals have ever had in postseason in history. Mm-hmm. Ken was phenomenal in postseason, and he was a guy that was, you know, not going to make the Braves team and came to us and flourished. Yeah. I feel like stars can kind of come out of, you know, and again, I'd point to my favorite player as a kid was Ron Swoboda. He wasn't a star, but he was still my favorite player because I just liked the way he played defense. And I think there's something. I think you can still love the players in the game, whether or not they're stars or not. It's again familiarity, being there and following them.
And style can bring people to the ballpark.
And there's no doubt. And I would like to see the Cardinals run more. I know that's not an antiquated thing to say, but I just heard on the MLB call this week that more stolen bases in baseball since 1919, mm-hmm. and that. I guess I hadn't quite heard it phrased that way or said that way. That's pretty cool. And so I think that's a bandwagon to jump on right now, and that can be part of the fun.
Yeah. The team with the fewest steals since they enlarged the bases in the National League Central.
Yes.
You get one guess who it is.
I won't guess because I've got my positive hat on still.
It is the Cardinals, and it's really not close. It's crazy. Yeah. They made the bases bigger, and they still didn't go.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that last spring training the Cardinals ran a lot and then kind of stopped.
The offense won.
Yeah, it did. And you're looking for the boppers to bop, and they weren't bopping. Yeah. And it was just unfortunate. But I think, you know, the energy can go in a different direction. You got Victor Scott, Michael Ciani. You've got some player Mason Wynn that certainly can run. And you know, but again, you got to be on to do it. And Newt Barr and others. But you got to get on base to do it. And you also, you know, when you're down, your starting pitching is still. Always come back to that. That really matters. Mm-hmm. If you're down 4-0, you're not running.
Right.
And there were too many games like that.
Too many games like that. Yeah, they played from behind too often. Mm-hmm. Some of it was the offense, which was strange, but it didn't thump with runners in scoring position. Ricky, there's a wall at Dodger Stadium. Despite all the renovations and all the winning and all the spending there, there remains a wall at Dodger Stadium that says, I believe, once a Dodger, always a Dodger. Yeah. And your name is on it. Mm-hmm. I'd be remiss not to ask you about what you make of the Dodgers and what they're doing and how you feel about that as someone in the game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I mean, the Dodgers are so like the Cardinals in so many ways in terms of the expectation of winning, tradition, great history, all of that. And so when I went to L.A., I felt, you know, felt like, well, this is kind of like St. Louis, and in all those respects that I
As everybody does. Yeah. I go to L.A. to visit my son, and man, it's like, this is just like St. Louis.
It really is. And it's a little different. It's a little nicer weather, but it is, but you go to the the reunions, and that back in the day, there's Sandy Koufax and Roy Campanella, and I mean, they just that had that Cardinal feel.
And
to
there's
it.
Bob Gibson and Reggie. It's exactly the same.
Right. Yeah, and that's the way it's similar. But you know what they're doing now, I feel like, you know, I don't love the where baseball is in the economics right now, and I think that has to change and will change, because it almost feels like the Yankees of the 70s, it feels like the Steinbrenner Yankees of the 70s and 80s, and it's like, okay, they're going to buy everybody, and I think the Dodgers are just better at doing it than the Yankees were back then. The Yankees won a lot then too, but the Dodgers are just doubling down. I mean, they're just getting the right guy, they're winning, and then they're spending more, and I don't know what the end of the line is with that in terms of, you know, how much money they can possibly spend. So if you want to kind of pare them back a little bit and help the Oakland team or wherever they end up is, you know, be more competitive, or the Milwaukees or the Miamis to be competitive against LA, you need to kind of change the way the economics works, and maybe then the TV deal in 2028 does that. That's probably gonna be what happens, and we may have to deal with it till then. So I mean, it's almost like, it used to be that everybody loved the Dodgers. Now I feel like everybody hates the Dodgers. So I don't really tell anybody I play for the Dodgers.
Yeah, they're the new evil empire.
They're the new Dallas Cowboys, or the, you know, either love them or hate them, and so, or the Yankees would be in that same boat. So you know, I like Dave Roberts a lot. They are very nice to me in a lot of ways. We've got a, you know, our reunion coming up in a couple of years again there. So, you know, fond memories, great experiences, grateful that I got a ring that says LA on it, and, you know, thankful for my time there and for Tommy Lasorda and others. But, you know, it still has to get fixed.
We liken them to a fully functional Death Star, and it's going to take like a ragtag kid from Tatooine to knock them out.
I think that's a really good analogy. You're good at that. You should be a writer.
I'm fascinated by what's happening. And now, like, you know, like, quick subplot to this is, think of how different it would have been if a few years ago, when the union and Major League Baseball had that extension period, right? Yeah. After they had the CBA, they had that extension period where, okay, qualifying offers go away, but only if you get an international draft. It's a little thing, right? Well, they couldn't come up to an agreement on an international draft, so qualifying offers are back, all right? So you know what would happen if there was an international draft? Roky Sasaki wouldn't be a Dodger.
Yeah.
His rights would have gone to the team, what, the White Sox? So, like, if it had been in place by now, because it may have been, but you know that there would have been, like, he would not have had his choice, which I like the fact that he had his choice. I really do.
Yeah, I understand.
But I don't like the fact that, like, the Dodgers now also got the best and most valuable and biggest bang for the buck talent as well.
It's always been interesting to think about the economics of the game of baseball, and I'm not just talking about right now, I'm talking about since its history with the reserve clause and the, you know, free agencies. And, you know, I was on the negotiating committee for basic agreement two different times, and so I was in on a lot of those discussions about, you know, players getting salary caps and owners, you know, revenue sharing, and it's been through all of that, but it really goes back to the beginning, and at first saying that baseball is it's not a business, it's a game. And it's like, well, you know I think, you know, for a player to be able to go as an independent contractor and a free agent wherever he wants to go, I mean, I think that's kind of a right thing to be able to do. So I'm still on that page, but I think you can create some rules to limit, you know, somebody, you know, it's why we have government, to limit some of the excesses that can happen, and hopefully that will happen.
Whatever happens, we won't lack for stories to tell.
We'll have them. There's a baseball, the game, For you, writes. I mean, and sometimes it writes itself, and sometimes for me, it just, you know, the game just speaks for itself, and I just have to kind of put words to that on a broadcast, and because it's reality theater to me. It is real, and it's reality that's actually real because it happens, and you don't know what's going to happen. You really don't know about 20 different Cardinal players, what kind of season they're going to have. It's going to be fun to find out.
Yeah, it doesn't always take a win for there to be drama. Shakespeare wrote tragedies, too.
Yeah, yes, he did. Yes, he did. I was in a Shakespearean play as a kid.
I am not surprised by this.
I was Demetrius. I was one of the tragedies there. But, yeah, it's all good.
Buried the lead. Ricky, thank you so much. I look forward to your call. You're doing the games here from spring for KMOX, 11:20 a.m. You're looking forward to that, I bet.
I am, and I appreciate your friendship, Derek. We've been friends a long time, and great to visit.
Thanks to Ricky Horton, Cardinals broadcaster there at KMOX 11:20 a.m. and throughout the Cardinals radio network. He was kind enough to join me early in the morning one day before workouts this week as the Cardinals prepped for the opening of the Grapefruit League Saturday. They're the visitor at their home ballpark against their roommates, the Miami Marlins, and then it's really a full sprint to opening day with a side trip to Tampa to face the Yankees and, for the first time since the Cardinals left St. Pete, visit the Toronto Blue Jays. It sure looks like that game against the Yankees is when Quinn Matthews is set to make his Cardinals Grapefruit League debut. We'll have plenty to discuss about that. The best podcast in baseball. You can find all of the Constant Cardinals coverage and all of our spring training coverage from my colleagues Daniel Guerrero and Benjamin Hockman at stltoday.com and in the pages of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. It is at stltoday.com that you can subscribe to the new newsletter so you get something directly from my laptop to you every Friday morning. That's a new addition this year, and that's something that we're going to continue every week, every Friday. 9 a.m. it should go out. It might go out earlier, but it's definitely going to go out every Friday. Some notes and news and insight and analysis and hopefully a little something different every week from me out to the readers. That is the newsletter Right Fielder. Of course, you can find the best podcast in baseball wherever you get your podcasts. It's brought to you weekly by Closets by Design of St. Louis. Look for it, rate it, review it, and subscribe to it. Talk to you soon.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.